on radio with my dad, Farmer Brad, from the local food front in Washington County, Texas.
Hey folks, this is Farmer Brad
and Jenny,
and I know it's been a while since we've done a show. Of course, we've been very busy during this time of the year, getting through our spring and summer, and here it is in the middle of August, August the 13th, and we haven't seen much rain. In fact, we haven't even seen any significant rain since the end of March, so you know how that story goes. But we did pretty well this season despite it all, and just things are slowing down a little bit as we're getting ready for the fall, and we're also signing up, getting new members ready for our fall CSA. So it's another important time of the year for planning and a lot of bed prep, busy in the greenhouse and getting things ready to get back in the fields here in a few weeks as soon as it slows down. But today I've got an exciting program. Mr. John Eichert is going to be with us for an interview I had with him. And Mr. Eichert is an inspiring individual. He's really one of the biggest agricultural economist here in the country, and really understands the importance of small farms. And I wanted to bring him on today because on September 4th, he's going to be in Houston, Texas for a conference called the Food and Sustainable Prosperity for the Houston Region, which is put on by a group of organizations. It's going to be September 4th beginning at 8:30 a.m. and I'm going to be there. John Eichert being there is just worth the trip himself, and I hope to see everybody there. I think it's going to be an important, there's a lot of legislators that are there, and I think it's going to be important for there to be a good turnout for people that are truly involved, intimately involved in the local food movement, and that's just not producers, but food eaters, so they can understand the small farm paradigm, because typically in these sorts of settings, when we talk agriculture, we're not even talking about the same thing. And Mr. Eichert, I see, is the voice on this conference that's really going to emphasize the importance of small farms, which is what we're all about and what our listeners are all about. So it's an exciting program that he's going to be here. For more information, I would go to their website at houstonfood.net. It looks like it's $50 early registration one day and includes all food. So hopefully serve some local food if that's what this is about.
And John Eichert, we've heard before. He has an incredible presentation. We had the benefit of listening to him at the, which year was it, Brad? The TCOOPS conference.
Texas Organic Conference. I was president then and was responsible for bringing Mr. Eichert down. It was 2 years ago, so it actually would have been the 2006 conference. He was our keynote speaker. And let me tell you, folks, this guy is so inspiring. It was like walking away from a Baptist church revival.
People were in tears, actually, after this presentation. Amazing.
Yep. Oop, hear the geese in the background. We are on a farm. But we're having a great time, and we're looking forward to this interview. We're happy to share it with you guys and tell you more about this conference coming up at the end of the session. And stick with us. Enjoy Home Sweet Farm Radio.
Intensive management allows a farmer to manage less land, using less labor, while handling fewer dollars. By managing fewer resources more intensively, the farmer is able to make more profit per unit of output, and thus make more total profits, even if total production or output is less. As the farmer has more time and attention to give to each acre of land, each worker, and each dollar invested, the farmer's relationship to the land and the people of the land is strengthened. The small farmer has an opportunity to know the land, to care about it, to learn how to care for it, has time to care for it, and can afford to care about it. The land on a small farm can be used well and can remain sustainably productive. This quote is from Small Farms Are Real Farms, Sustaining People Through Agriculture by John Eichert.
John Eichert, Professor Emeritus of Agricultural Economics at the University of Missouri, has written extensively on how sustainable farming practices affect and are affected by industrialization, the environment, economics, and communities. He now spends his time writing and speaking out on issues related to sustainable agriculture, with an emphasis on the economics of sustainability. Eichert is the author of Sustainable Capitalism, A Return to Common Sense, Small Farms Are Real Farms, and Crisis and Opportunity, Sustainability in American Agriculture. When I'm up next, I'll share with you my interview with John Eichert and tell you more about upcoming conference in Houston in a few weeks. Stick with us.
Well, going back and looking at history a little bit, it was 3 years ago that I was involved bringing you down here to Texas for that Texas Organic Farming Conference. And the only way I can explain it, how impressive we were and excited we were with your presentation, is almost like walking out of a Baptist church revival afterwards. We were all fired up, and it was a great way to start our conference, and you, in your words, just really summed up what it was all about and what we were doing during that time, and it's always been you've been a big encouragement to me and a lot of us that someone's out there that understands what we're doing, and there is an importance to continue small farming. Also, the lecture that you gave with the earlier this year with the Shivers lecture. That was up in Iowa, I guess, February.
Right.
That was excellent also. And I'll give links to these things that we're talking about so people can dig in a little bit more. But something that, here we're coming up to economic sustainability is in question in the future, and especially with rising fuel prices. And I was interested in, we need to obviously come up with some alternatives for energy, and also come up with alternative or better ways of producing more food for more people using less fossil fuels.
Right.
And I'm curious what your take is on biofuels, and is that going to be an answer or part of the answer, or how do you see the role that biofuels will play in the future?
Well, first of all, I really think that the challenges now that we're seeing in terms of increased attention being paid to global climate change and to the intimate peak in fossil oil or fossil energy supplies, or peak oil as people refer to it, and the declining energy, fossil energy, as we go into the future, is really kind of the other side of global warming. But I think these are two factors that are really going to continue to get public attention in the months and in the years ahead. And I think these are basic forces that have been driving the organic food movement and the local food movement for a long period of time. It just hasn't been so obvious because they're fundamentally questions of long-run sustainability. And when we talk about sustainability, we're talking about energy, because everything that we do that has any use to us, anything that's useful or has economic value, ultimately is about energy. If you think about it, our houses, our clothes, and our cars, our food, all take energy to make, and they all take energy to use. And even the usefulness that we are as human beings, working and thinking and creating and imagining and things like that all takes energy. I think something like the more than a third of the energy used by the body is used by the brain. And the issue of sustainability comes back is that energy is neither created or destroyed. That's kind of the first law of thermodynamics. But the second law says that each time you use energy or reuse it, then some of its usefulness is lost. And so what we're seeing here now is we've gone through a period of time when we had abundant supplies of relatively easily accessible fossil energy, and we had a world that was relatively clean where it seemed like that we could dump an infinite amount of waste and nature would find some way to take care of it. That's no longer the reality that we're confronting today. We've used up all of the cheap and easily accessible energy, and that's the reason that energy prices from here on out are going to be higher. You know, it's not that we're running out of energy, it's just that we're running out of cheap and easy kind of energy. And global warming is the other side of that, because all of the things that we're releasing into the atmosphere that are causing the issues of global climate change or global warming are the elements that are in the fossil energy. And as we release the energy from those biological sources of energy, which all fossil energy is, all the coal and oil and everything else, then we're releasing those carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, you know, carbon dioxide and nitrates and various things back into the atmosphere, and we're getting to a point where that's changing the climate. So these are the factors that are really going to continue to push us into the future. And so we can't separate then the issue of biofuels and ethanol and biodiesel from these issues of global warming and the overall cost of energy. But I think the important thing is when we look to the future and we look at alternative sources of energy, the only truly sustainable sources of energy in the long run is solar energy, which is, you know, is collected by green plants, and that's what we tend to think of as biofuels, of the diesel and ethanol and things of that nature. But also wind energy is solar energy. It's the sun that, you know, that creates the differences in temperature and the differences in air pressure that cause the air to move around. And water energy is also solar energy. And then, of course, the photovoltaic cells. The key thing about bioenergy when we think about it in ethanol and biodiesel and that sort of thing is the biological sources. Is what we're talking about here is energy that we depend upon as human beings. We're part of the biological system. We're biological beings. You know, we can't eat the wind, and we can't eat the electricity that's generated by a photovoltaic cell, or we can't eat, you know, from a waterfall. We need to eat. We survive on the energy that comes from that biological system. And when we're taking energy from the food system, from a plant source, a biological source, and we're diverting that into an alternative for fossil energy, regardless of how, you know, direct the competition is, it's pretty direct when we're taking corn and turning it into ethanol. But it's still there and still very important if we start talking about things such as switchgrass, because the land that's used to produce the switchgrass could we could be grazing cattle or running livestock on it, which we could be turning into meat, milk, or eggs or something of that nature. So I think the important thing is to recognize that it's all tied up in the same kind of energy flow in this kind of nutrient cycle of all these minerals that are going around. And so when we're talking about bioenergy, we're talking about taking energy out of that cycle. I think ultimately the biggest challenge for agriculture, and we'll come to that conclusion as a society, is how are we going to feed more people? How are we going to feed an increasing global population in a world that no longer has cheap fossil energy, nor can afford to continue to put greenhouse gases into the atmosphere for altering the climate? Because right now, the kind of the best estimates that I've seen recently, and maybe even higher now, is we're using about 17% of the total fossil energy that's used in this country is used by agriculture and by the food system. And in fact, we're using about 10 calories of fossil energy for every calorie of food energy that we're producing today. And even at the farm level, we're using something like 3 calories of fossil energy for every calorie of food energy. And so if you look out into the future then, and you look toward a world where fossil energy costs are going to continue to go up, we're going to have declining supplies of fossil energy, and we're inherently dependent upon that flow of biological energy for our food and our well-being, the real challenge is how are we going to continue to feed ourselves with less fossil energy in the world ahead, rather than how can we create an alternative or a substitute for fossil energy by using agriculture. I think the logical alternatives for dealing with the declining fossil energy availability in total are to look at alternative solar energy sources that would include the wind and the water and the photovoltaic cells. But at the same time, I think we have to come to the realization that we're simply going to have to conserve and use less energy per person. But I think ultimately we'll conclude that the top priority for agriculture has to be producing food for people and not fuel for our automobiles.
Earlier this year, I was a part of a discussion group up at Texas A&M, and of course I was way out of my league, and Dr. Bruce McCarl and Dr. James Richardson, I think Dr. Richardson, you probably know him for sure.
Right. He'd yes.
run a Nobel Prize winner on their research on global warming. And as they were giving their presentations, it seemed to me that this global warming, there's an exact coalition with the industrialization of our food. I mean, besides the amount of fuel that we were talking that it takes to grow this food, they were talking about how agriculture is a major contributor to global warming.
Right.
And so we're pointing at agriculture like that's the problem, but the point, you know, we know agriculture isn't bad. That
right.
It's not a bad thing at all. It's the way that we're growing
right.
our food now. And I was wondering, you know, what I was suspecting, looking at my farm, you know, a small farm.
Right.
Really, the major use of our fuel consumption on our farm is in distribution, not necessarily actually growing the food.
Right.
And I suspected that's the case even for the industrial farms.
Right. A large portion of the energy used in agriculture today is a direct consequence of the industrialization of agriculture, as I call it. It's the specialization, the standardization, consolidation of control into ever larger units. And it's that characteristic of agriculture that results in it being the big energy user. The big energy use going into agriculture in general is for, the biggest is nitrogen fertilizer, because nitrogen fertilizer is made from natural gas. It's natural gas that provides kind of the feedstock or the actual elements that go into the nitrogen fertilizer, but it's also the natural gas that provides the heat and the pressure that it takes to pull the nitrogen out of the atmosphere and put it into a form that we can fertilize the crops. So if you're going to an organic farming system, then you're moving away from the nitrogen system. Industrial agriculture is very dependent upon high levels of nitrogen fertilizer. If you move away from that and go to an organic and a lower input system, then what you're doing there is you're using the natural processes of nature to get the nitrogen into the soil and to fertilize the crop, which means that you're using basically solar energy. So whatever you're releasing, you're collecting whatever you're releasing back out into the atmosphere in the process of producing the crop rather than relying on the nitrogen. And it's also when you go to the bigger scale operations, that's when you get into heavier use of equipment, and that's when you get into geographic specialization, where you specialize in producing crops in one area. And you know, the common figure that most people come up with, it varies all over, but food moving, you know, average of about 1,500 miles from the place that it's grown to the place it's consumed. All of those are a direct consequence of kind of this industrialized agricultural system that's highly fossil energy dependent in terms of fertilizers and pesticides and geographic specialization, which makes it transportation dependent, high levels of mechanization, which makes it dependent on, you know, fuel and things of that nature. So, but if you look at the research that's been done on alternative agriculture, organic agriculture, the studies would indicate would reduce the fossil energy use in crop production by about a third relative to what it would be in conventional crop production. But the biggest savings would come in terms of livestock production. That's the big energy user and the big contributor to greenhouse gases. And we're talking basically about two sides of the same thing. When we're cutting energy use, we're also cutting greenhouse gas emissions. As I indicated earlier, the greenhouse gases are simply the result of releasing the energy from fossil or biological sources. If we want, for example, to go to a grass-based livestock operation, if we simply go to the typical range cattle operation in comparison to a feedlot operation, we can cut energy use by about a third, about two-thirds, only be about a third as much in the range operation. And if you go to management-intensive grazing operations where you can double, essentially increase 50% to double the amount of protein or amount of animal protein you produce per acre, then you're going to cut the energy use proportionately even more because you're using a biological energy source when you're managing that pasture. There's also been studies that have been done on greenhouse gas emissions and indicates that in the process of producing, let's say, a steak in the feedlot as comparison to producing a steak of an animal that's finished on grass, you're only using about one-fifth. You're only releasing about one-fifth of the greenhouse gases with a grass-based livestock operation. So, it seems to me when we talk about organic cropping systems, it's not just a matter of it's easier to do, for example, if you have an integrated crop and livestock system where you can run the animals on pastures and then make sure that the manure gets back onto the fields, and you have crop rotations where you bring the organic crop production back to those fields after you've had livestock grazing on them and that sort of thing, that we could easily be talking about an agricultural system that would use, probably a fifth, no more than a fifth of the fossil energy, or release no more than about a fifth of the greenhouse gases that we're doing today. And we already have the know-how to do this. It would require a significant change in the basic structure of agriculture. It would require a lot more farms and a lot fewer feedlots and a lot more animals out here on grass in various places, and a lot more farmers. But I think the pattern is already out there for a fundamental change in agriculture to a much more solar energy utilizing agriculture that uses less fossil energy and releases far fewer greenhouse gases into the atmosphere than the industrial agriculture we have today. The problem is not agriculture, it's industrial agriculture. And the alternative is not to use an energy-intensive, fossil energy-intensive industrial agriculture to produce fuel, but to start using an integrated, sustainable, organic, local kind of food system to replace the industrial food system. And if we move ahead on that quickly, and we're moving in that direction, within 30 to 50 years, we could have a fundamentally different food system that wouldn't be contributing significantly to greenhouse, to global warming or greenhouse gases emissions, and it would be, much more fossil energy efficient, if not totally solar energy driven. And we could have, it would be a much more kind of a local-oriented food system, much more like an organic, sustainable, low-input food system. And we'd still be moving some food, around the globe and across the country, but much more of the food would be produced much closer to home, and there'd be much closer relationships between the farmers and their customers within their local communities.
Well, it only took that same amount of time to move away from that kind of a sustainable system with the industrialization of farming and Wendell Berry had mentioned something that farming went wrong when we took the animals off the farm, like I said, and you start specializing different enterprises like you talk about, and I'm happy to say we finally got it there at our farm where now we've integrated animals and they're part of that rotation behind our crops. And I tell you, I'm seeing the life of the soil improve so much faster. It's incredible. But this type of farming you're talking about is definitely management intensive, and it takes a relationship with your land, and basically I think only a family farm can really do it successfully. And
that's one of the points I like to make about the importance of family farms, not only for sustainable agriculture but for long-run food security of a nation or of humanity in general, because it's the connectedness between the farmer and the family and the land. That's absolutely essential if you're going to farm sustainably the way I've talked about here. You have to fit the farming system to a particular piece of land and particular climate and to the particular people that are farming. Certain individuals have different talents and different abilities and have different goals and aspirations, and all of that has to fit together, which means that, as I like to say, on a true family farm, the family and the farm are inseparable. They're inseparable aspects of the same whole. And it is much more management intensive. There's more thinking. There's more labor in general in those kinds of operations, but there's a limit to how hard you can work. It's much more about thinking about what kind of system do you put here, how do livestock come into the operation, what kind of crops, what kind of livestock, how do you put it together, which customers, where are willing to pay and to support the kind of products that you can produce on that particular farm. And all of that's much more intensive, and that's the reason we'll need more farmers. When people say, oh, we can't produce enough food organically or with a sustainable system to feed society, what they're basically saying is we can't produce enough food with the same number of farmers or with fewer farmers, which has been the trend over the long run. And I would like to just point out that having fewer farmers made sense back in the time when we were industrializing the rest of the economy and we needed people to go to work in the factories and offices that were being built during the 1800s and 1900s. And there was a scarcity of labor, and there was a scarcity of people to work in those factories. So it made sense then to create a kind of agriculture that had fewer people or required fewer people on the land up to a certain point. But what we didn't anticipate, or in the beginning of that, is that as we moved toward that industrial system of agriculture, which allowed fewer people to produce more food and feed more people, we didn't anticipate kind of the ecological or environmental consequences of that heavy input industrial agriculture, or we didn't anticipate kind of the social consequences of moving all the people out of rural areas and moving people into the cities and things of that nature, and we certainly didn't anticipate kind of the ecological consequences that are associated with global climate change and things of that nature. So we've come to a point now where that kind of agriculture is creating more problems than it is solutions. And the other side of that, where I started, is that we're in a world now where we're looking for opportunities for people to be employed productively. And we're talking about opportunities not just to use brute force or labor or the sweat of the brow, but opportunities where people can learn to do something that's very unique and specialized in the sense of having to understand a particular place and a particular process, where it's important for the person to think and act as an individual, as a thinking human being, rather than a sophisticated machine of some sort or even a computer. And so it seems to me that the kind of agriculture we're talking about here in the future, the low-input, organic, sustainable agriculture, is the ideal kind of employment opportunity as we're moving ahead and we talk about, a knowledge-based society and the information-based society. This is specifically the kinds of people that we need to have on farms in the future. And as I travel around the country and talk to people like yourself and others at conferences all across this country, which are growing in number, that's the kind of people I see that are successful farming today, organic farmers, sustainable farmers. I often tell, my colleagues in the universities in particular, if I have a chance where I'm speaking to them, I say the best educated people, the best read, the most thoughtful, most intellectual people that I interact with are the farmers. They're the farmers at these conferences and farmers that are out here creating this new kind of agriculture and creating this new kind of food system. And these are the kind of opportunities that we need to be looking for in terms of employment opportunities for the future, rather than trying to figure out how are we going to, pardon me putting it so bluntly, but how are we going to dumb down agriculture so somebody can do it without thinking. And that's basically what we're doing in this contract, corporate contract kind of agriculture, where it's in the large-scale confinement animal feeding operations or the large cropping operations where everything's done under contract and everything, you have to have a license for the seed and for the fertilizer and pesticide, and everything comes in a recipe, rather than kind of dumbing down agriculture to the point where you know, you can't really make a living at it because the farmer is not left in a position of doing anything really creative or innovative or productive. We ought to be thinking about how we're going to get more people out here in this thinking kind of agriculture where the individual farmer has to figure out how they can work with nature and how they can work within the community and how they can do something that's really productive and economically valuable, but also is socially responsible, that contributes to the social quality of life in the community and the family life, and also contributes to the environmental integrity and maintains and enhances the productivity of the resource base that's going to be needed to feed not only people of this nation, but of global society in the decades ahead.
Folks, that's all we have time for right now, but join us again next time. I'm going to have a second part of my interview with John Eichard, and we're going to talk more specifically about small family farms and the future they have. And don't forget the upcoming Food and Sustainable Prosperity Conference for the Houston region. It's on Thursday, September 4th, 8:30 to 5:30. It includes lunch for $50 early registration. More information, you can visit them online at houstonfood.net. And I'm going to have some other links on our website. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time for part two of this show, of this interview with Dr. Eichard. This is Farmer Brad from the Local Food Front in Washington County, Texas. Thanks for listening to Home Sweet Farm Radio.